The NBA is coming back. That got me excited.
Maybe.
The NBA. The NBA is coming back there.
We got Bruce Bochy's in the house.
Heard NBA is coming back along with football. Ahoy, hoy. Welcome to Head Games, the science and psychology of sports. I'm Dr. Brett Levine, joined as always by Dr. Ben Rosenberg. Ben, how are you?
I am pretty well, man. We learned today that daycare will not be open for the rest of the summer, so that's exciting.
Oh, great.
Lots of childcare for me, but otherwise, we're healthy, man. We're good. How about you?
That's good. All is well. All is well here in the Southlands.
Yeah.
So we've got a good show today. We have some interesting topics to cover. We are going to be talking about racial bias in the NFL, in particular racial bias with NFL referees. We're going to be talking about particularly ejections and suspensions in the NFL. I think it's important, just a quick programming note before we go forward. I think it's important that we keep talking about this issue. Number one is because I think it's certainly present. It's certainly a part of a lot of conversations, but I think if we want to be a part of something positive, it shouldn't just be a one and done show to keep moving forward. That, if you want to be part of something that's productive, that we keep bringing this up, that we that we keep writing about it, that we affect change. Again, we said this last week. You know, the goal of the show is really to help educate. I don't think we stop at sports psychology. I think it's helpful to educate.
Yeah.
Maybe using sports psychology as the vehicle to bring up these topics about race and bias and all this stuff. So,
well, and look, man, I mean, I'm a social psychologist by training, and like social psych has a ton to say, as we'll discuss shortly, about racial bias and intergroup relations and just biases in general and stereotyping. So there's a lot of juice there for us to talk about. And I think, as you said, education being the goal, one of the things we can do is translate some of that stuff in a way that's palatable, that people can help to understand people some of what's going on. And what really, there's a lot of conversations about these days.
Yep. Certainly something to contribute. Before we get started, some quick news. So the NBA is coming back. That got me excited.
Maybe.
The NBA. The NBA is coming back there.
We got Bruce Bochy's in the house.
Heard NBA is coming back along with football. late July, it looks like, NBA.
Yep.
And most recently, baseball. Baseball as well is coming back.
Yeah.
I think you alluded to it, fingers crossed. It's kind of weird because things are opening up. Sports are coming back as this virus continues to spread in the United States at an alarming rate. So fingers crossed, like we wrote an article about how this is a good thing in the sense that I think to kind of keep us indoors and keep us socially isolated, it would be cool if we had some sports to watch. That might be nice. Honestly though, I think that it can really help as a form of entertainment and really be inspirational to see sports coming back and give us something to look forward to give us hope. So if we can do it in a safe way, I think it's a good thing, but it's not looking good. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, happen. Easy for us to say too, not having to put our asses on the line and go and quarantine with a bunch of other dudes. Like we can sit at home and enjoy the programming, but we're not at risk in the same way. So
right.
I'm cautiously optimistic, I think, as you said.
Yeah, same. European soccer is back. EPL is back. Bundesliga is back. Serie A is back. And with all these leagues coming back, particularly soccer, I was reading about officiating in soccer, in European professional soccer. And with everything going on we talk about bias, I read this paper that looked at evidence in foul calls in European soccer and a bias towards home teams as well as successful teams, in that those home teams and those successful teams would have fewer fouls called on them as opposed to the visiting team or the less successful team. which has some interesting, like, I guess, face validity to it, would you say? In that it's like, yeah, that kind of makes sense, right? Like, you know, that's sort of understandable. I also read this article from the Quarterly Journal of Economics, a study done in the NBA back in 2010. And I found that, I'm just going to read it. We find that more personal fouls are awarded against players when they are officiated by an opposite race officiating crew than when they are officiated by an own race refereeing crew, meaning that white referees are going to be calling more calls against black players. Black referees are going to be calling more fouls against white players. So with everything going on, I thought this was an interesting take, an interesting slant, and we'll get into this a little bit more, but I wanted to look at it in the NFL. You and I started talking about what was going on. We looked at some data. Let me pose a question to you. Do you think that there is something about the way that we look? Let's say that it is race. Let's say that, you know, along the lines of what this paper saw, is there something that we, you know, is there something along the lines of the way that we look influencing the fouls that are called on us?
Short answer is there sure could be. I mean, basically, humans are, bred is the wrong word. We have adapted. There it is. Adapt. It's like, what
selectively.
Yeah.
Selectively. In a test tube.
That'd be weird. Humans have adapted, there it is, to have this kind of quick way of processing information that happens in an unconscious level that allows us to process the kind of volumes of stimuli that are confronting us all the time, right? So even just walking around, even talking to you right now, there's lots of shit going on around me. There's a light on, there's a baseball on my desk that almost broke.
Careful.
My computer with.
Careful, dude.
There's a baby running around outside. Like, we have to have a way to wade through all of that information and make sense of it. And so humans adapted this automatic processing system is what it's called, to basically get through all that stuff. So the sort of crux of it is that this system is in general really good. Like, it does a good job. It allows us to kind of live our lives. Without this system, we would just be lost. We'd have no idea what's going on.
We'd be overwhelmed with all this shit coming at us.
Completely overwhelmed. We'd have no clue what to do with anything. We couldn't make decisions. We'd be paralyzed, basically. We rely on this system to process all this stuff in the background unconsciously for us. So that's good, right? This is a good thing that we have this system. The problem is, because we're doing this at an unconscious, quick level, the system almost by necessity is prone to error. It has to rely on what psychologists call heuristics or shortcuts to make decisions and make judgments about things that we see any stimuli that are coming in, right? So this is on the one hand a good thing that we have the system, but on the other hand, it is bad potentially because there are errors that can occur in processing. So all of this is a long-winded way of saying what two famous social psychologists said in the 80s. They called people cognitive misers. Basically, the idea that we're going to take any shortcut we can in order to make a quicker, more efficient decision, simply because we have so much stimuli that we're confronted with at any given time. So placing this in the context of the NFL and referees, think about if there's all that much stuff going on around us, me and you sitting here right now, think about everything that's happening in an NFL game. Right? Bodies are flying around. These dudes are fast.
22
big. Just beating the shit out of each other, running routes. Like, most of the refs aren't in their mid-20s like these players, right? So some of those refs, like Ed Hockley's fucking jacked, but a lot of these guys aren't as athletic as the players, certainly. So they're moving as fast as they can, both physically and cognitively, to keep up with everything that's happening.
Yep.
So put yourself in the shoes of a referee and something happens in the midst of a game, right? So you wrote about Myles Garrett situation from last year. Dude takes his helmet off and
He had his helmet on.
You're right. He had his helmet on. He takes off Mason Rudolph's helmet.
Yeah. And beats him with it.
And fucking bludgeons him with it. Right.
Yeah.
Midst of the game. So this is insanity. This is the peak of insanity if you're a ref. So it's your job to make sense of what the hell's happening, right? Good luck. So you're lucky to have this quick automatic system to help you do this.
Yeah.
The problem is that the system can screw up, right? So you're going to make the best judgment you can as quickly as you can, given that situation. So we wanted to take this idea and actually, like you said, look at some data and see if there's evidence of, in particular, any racial bias happening in the NFL.
Let me ask a quick question before you go into the data. How does this, and like, you know, you have an expertise in this area, so it's an honest question from me who's not an expert.
Yeah.
So, okay, I see something out of the corner of my eye and I think it's a fucking snake. And I'm like, oh fuck, is that a fucking snake? And it's a garden hose. And I'm like, shit, you know, I was almost, you know, paralyzed for life by that garden hose. But like, how does that lead to racism? So, I don't want to say racism, but like, let's say racial bias, right? Like, you know, I'm a referee and I'm seeing all these, you know, bodies flying around or whatever it may be. Why would there be racial bias? Why would there be racial bias in the NBA, which we've already seen evidence of?
That's a good question. So basically the system relies on categorization and relies on stereotyping and putting things in buckets, basically. That's one of the easiest ways for us to make generalizations, to make judgments, to make conclusions about things. So the automatic processing is just reliant on using these kind of groupings. If you're an X, that means you have X characteristics. It's reliant on those kind of judgments to allow us to make those kind of quick decisions. The problem, of course, and this I think is what you're getting at, is that every member of group X doesn't have X characteristics, right? There are plenty of cases where just because you're a soccer player doesn't mean you're super fast or whatever the stereotype might be, right? So stereotypes don't always equal reality, which is where the system can kind of get screwy.
Okay,
where
so
errors
it's,
can happen.
So it seems like it's two things. It's number one, it's a really quick judgment that's error ridden all the time, but it's evolved to like help us survive and determine if there's a snake next to us or a garden hose.
Right.
And then the other one is this chunking system that sort of just groups things.
Absolutely.
So very quickly I'm making decisions, and secondly, I'm making decisions based on this grouping thing, which is efficiently built to stereotype.
Exactly. Efficiently built to stereotype. And again, it bears repeating that most of the time, those quick stereotyped judgments we make are accurate, right? They're good. And maybe not even necessarily accurate, but they lead us to the correct decision. So you, as a caveman, thinking that garden hose is a snake, not that they had garden hoses
in
caveman times. So you
made of rocks?
you thinking the rock over there is a saber-toothed tiger.
Yeah.
Ultimately, even if it's not, you have to err on the side of being secure and safe, right? Because if you screw up and you're saying,
you're dead.
It's just a rock. You're dead. You literally are dead. So,
right.
So this system evolved over many years when those kind of perceptions of threat and that kind of big bucketing stereotyping was really useful and had survival value to us. So
that makes sense.
And you could argue now that survival value is like kind of left less adaptive now, right? Like we don't need to perceive threat in all the same ways that we used to.
Yeah, it's a lot safer out there. There's fewer saber-toothed tigers. You know, we have hospitals now.
Slightly. Although there was a mountain lion walking around San Francisco recently. Did you see this?
Oh, shit.
Yeah, dude.
No.
He broke into the zoo and ate like a fucking ostrich or something. Yeah, bro. Sav.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
There's like security camera footage of this dude just like stalking around the city, man. It's nuts.
That is so cool.
Yeah, it's pretty sick.
I gotta look that up.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Yeah.
So the data.
I totally derailed
that.
Yeah, go to it.
Yeah. So the data. So
mountain lions now.
I mean, hey. So we wanted to see if this kind of bias was present among NFL refs. And we thought a good way to examine these kind of split second automatic decisions that refs are making is ejections, right? Like this is something that you have to, as a ref, make in a generally a split second. Yeah, maybe you confer about it with the rest of your ref buddies, but ultimately your initial kind of statement that this guy should be ejected is probably going to hold some sway. So this is happening quickly. You're making a judgment in this kind of setting with all of this stuff happening, right? So here's what we did. Well, here's what you did because you found the data and did all the hard work. Exactly. So you compiled a bunch of data on the racial makeup of the NFL, right?
And we did this together.
You're right. Okay, we did it. You're right. We did it together on the racial makeup of the NFL. On average, the percentage of black players in the league ranges between, let's call it 66 and 70%, right?
Yeah,
any given year.
It was so between 1992.
91 and 2019, I'm seeing my notes up here, to range between 58, 59 and 69, basically.
91 and 19. Yeah, it was 65.5%.
Yeah. So basically 2/3 of the league is black over that period of time, or black players over that period of time. Yep. And most of the rest of the league is white, right? Around 30, 31% or so of the league is white. So if these percentages hold true, if there's not much bias in the referee's judgments, we'd expect that ejections would reflect about these same percentages, right? About 66 and about 30% or so. Unfortunately, that's not what we find, right? So if you look at ejections, we just had a couple years worth, 2017 to 2019, so 3 years worth of data, 95% of ejections were black players. So compare that again with 66% or so of the league are black players.
Right.
95% of players were ejections. Yeah, that's almost 30% differential there. So a huge chunk, right? We can't claim this is absolutely what's causing this differential, but this is a whopping difference that we're finding.
Yeah. And I think there's, just to clarify, I think that, so a penalty is called on the field, right? And it's from one of the seven referees who's watching the game, and all these bodies are flying around, and the initial judgment is made in an instant, right? Like a referee's watching, he throws the fucking flag, and there's a penalty called. And after every penalty, the referees can confer. They get together. So it's an initial like knee-jerk reaction to seeing something, to responding to, let's say, a bias, or responding to something, you know, in a snap judgment in an instant. But they have a second to talk about it as a team. In the cases of ejections, they also have time to review it via video, I think, for especially the more nuanced or more violent ones. Like, I'm pretty sure the Myles Garrett ejection was reviewed by video.
And then the game stopped for like an hour when they were talking about that whole thing.
Yeah. But the initial
judgment's still rendered, right? And in a second.
That's the point. The point is it all goes back to the initial judgment, which is biasing the whole chain of events after that.
Yeah, absolutely.
If it's the referees conferring, it all started with someone's snap judgment of throwing the penalty flag. Right. If there's a video review, it all started from this moment of judgment, which I think sort of casts a shadow on the whole thing. And you say okay, well, look, there's a team of referees. We can root out bias. You know, there's video review. 95% of ejections were for black players when they only make up 66% of the league. I mean, there's something going on. I don't know if we're coming up with this explanation. If that's not the explanation, I want to fucking hear what is, because that's 30% higher than the actual league. And during that same time frame between 2017 and 2019, we should double check this. I'm pretty certain only one player was white when they make up 30% of the league.
Yeah.
So there's something going on, and
something's happening. We're offering an explanation that is pretty obviously backed by a boatload of social psychological evidence. But certainly we can't say that this is what's causing it, right?
Yep. So that's ejections. I want to pivot now to the second part, which is suspensions. And it's getting into this idea of not everything is necessarily a snap judgment, because as we'll talk about in a bit, suspensions have even longer periods of time to make the final call about a player being suspended.
Yeah.
So I actually got to thinking about this because of everything that was going on recently with Aldrich Rosas.
Fucking idiot, man.
So he's the kicker. It's a fucking dude, kicker.
What is that? What is that? The kicker.
Yeah. Yeah, so the kicker for the New York Giants, Aldrich Rosas, young guy, 25 years old. It's 8:25 a.m. on a Monday, and he's going a hundo, 100 miles an hour, apparently, like, you know, swerving in between the double yellows, T-bones another car. I think he got out. He was all bloody.
He got out and ran, I believe.
Yeah. They're saying that what I'm reading here is that alcohol impairment is believed to be a factor. Let me just stop. Let me just stop and just say, if you need help, if you're out there and you know you're struggling, whatever it is, please seek help. We are authors on Psychology Today. There's a link at the top up there to help find a therapist if you need to talk to somebody.
Don't do what Aldrich Rosas did.
Please don't, because I mean, again, Monday morning, 8:25,
bro.
It's pretty rough. So
yeah.
Anyway, he's probably going to be suspended if he already isn't. I think the Giants.
They haven't made a decision yet. I think that the Giants. I was just reading before we came on. The Giants have, I guess, potential to cut him, but there's a whole bunch of shit that could happen if they do that. So they aren't super prone to. They're probably waiting for a judgment from the league, just like we are.
$3.2 million contract.
Yikes.
For a kicker.
For a kicker.
Fucking kicker. So anyway, this happened who knows how long ago. The league is going to have not just that time period where there are seven referees getting together and they've got like a minute, you know, a few minutes maybe to make the call. Like you said, the Myles Garrett had an out, whatever it was. It's not usually a long period of time for those snap judgment calls, like ejections
On the field. Yeah.
On the field. Everyone's impatient. The players are impatient. The fans are impatient. They're like, get it over with.
Yep.
You know, there's a time period to this thing. Well, suspensions, like, I think that, doesn't that go all the way up to, like, you know, the league front office or something like that?
It goes,
like,
all the way up to Goodell. I think Goodell renders, the commissioner renders, like, the final decision.
The fine. So. I think at least the fine or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So that's a lot of time. And we're talking about these automatic judgments that are being made. Talk a little bit about what's going on in this case for suspensions, for the slower process. You know, what's happening there? And is that inherent process also a bit racially biased, or what's going on?
Yeah. So excellent question. I mean, the interesting thing about human cognition, right, is what we're talking about, is that we not only adapted this quick automatic system, right? It's coupled with a secondary system called controlled processing, where we're able to take a little bit more of a measured, kind of distanced, slower time to make a decision, to make a judgment about something, right? And so during times when, like, we are really knowledgeable about an issue, or we're really motivated to look into an issue, or it's really meaningful to us, or there's a lot riding on it, we will be more likely to sort of look past the automatic processing, or look in addition to interpret the automatic processing that we've done, to consider the issue that we're dealing with more deeply before we make, like, a final decision, right? So I think that maps onto nicely what you're talking about with suspensions, right? Generally, something happens that the player does something bad, whether it's in a game or off the field, like Rosas, and it takes a bit longer for this to wend through. And obviously the parties that are responsible for making the decision are engaging in this kind of slower, more controlled process to weigh all the evidence, to get the facts straight and make a decision. So the hope would be, again, that you wouldn't see bias, right? That this process, you're taking more time. You could override any biases that are present in that kind of automatic processing that we engage in. And again, unfortunately, that doesn't always happen. It can happen. And I don't want to say that it never happens, because people are able to override their automatic judgments of something to make a different kind of more controlled decision. But the judgments we make in that automatic processing influence, or can influence, the judgments that we make in the more controlled, slower type of processing. So that's what we really wanted to sort of dig into with this look at the data, right? And again, we unfortunately see evidence of some basically anti-Black prejudice in terms of the suspension decisions that are made at the league level, right? So again, the league averages that we're dealing with of Black and white players are about 66 and 30-ish%. And we'd expect that, again, suspensions would reflect those percentages if there's limited or no bias.
Right.
And here again, we see that about 90%, 89% of the players suspended are Black players, and only about 8% of the players suspended are white players. So again, we're seeing quite a chasm here, 20-ish percent chasm.
22%, yeah.
Yeah, 22% between the makeup of the league and the makeup of the players that we're seeing suspended.
I don't feel very hopeful. I'm learning about these two processes of the brain.
Yeah.
The automatic one, the quicker, like, knee-jerky reaction one, mm-hmm. the more controlled process. You're saying that the automatic one can influence the more controlled one.
Absolutely.
I mean, what about just like, you know, I think I was talking to my wife about this and I said, why do you think this is happening? I talked to her about the more controlled ones.
Yeah.
She said, because the league is probably run by a bunch of old white guys. So I think there's something to be said about like, and look, it's a big thing. I don't want to call the NFL racist. I don't want to call Roger Goodell racist. It's not, it's really not my place to, I think people can, I think people do. Mm-hmm. But like, at what point do we really just say like, this is systematic?
Yeah.
Maybe this is cultural. It's not just these, you know, I think you and I are like trying to explain the cognitive processes and why we saw this, but like, are there other, I'm sure there are other explanations.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah, to really get into this a little bit more because it's troubling to see.
Yeah.
I mean, these are, we're not talking about small percentages here. We're talking about 22, 30% differences between Black and white players on ejections and suspensions.
They're sizable differences for sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
So anyway, we posted the first one. We posted the ejections article today on Psychology Today if people want to read more about it.
Yep.
We're going to be posting the second one on controlled processes and suspensions coming up soon. Anything else on this topic or anything else in terms of this really about, I guess, now we're in controlled process. Is it just that it's biased by the automatic one or is there anything else that I think we need to know about?
I would actually leave on a more kind of end on a more hopeful note, which is I know, right, needed in this time, which is that there's some really good evidence out there that people who go through training to recognize their biases can, in fact, engage those controlled processes in such a way that they do overcome that initial bias that can happen in the automatic processing phase. And there's a whole bunch of cool studies out there looking at how to do this across the board in different professions. But also really cool stuff with kids, man. They do these studies where it's called the Jigsaw Classroom. They basically put kids together of a whole bunch of different backgrounds, racial or ethnic, socioeconomic status, intelligence, all these different things. And they put them into school teams together to work on stuff. And they find great evidence that the effects are lasting and that they show much less stereotyping, much less bias throughout their lives in a whole bunch of different ways. So to me,
this is an intervention.
Yeah. They do this in schools. And so to me, that portends some hope, right? It's like, this is possible to root out this kind of stuff at a systemic level. Like the movement is hopefully kind of pushing towards now is really freaking hard, but from at least a social, psychological, and kind of cognition perspective, it's possible. The tools are there to do it.
Yeah, that's a great way to end. Thank you. Needed that.
A little more hopeful, right?
Yeah. Please comment on today's show below. Also, make sure to subscribe. You can find us on Twitter at HeadGamePsych. You can find me on Twitter at Dr. Brett Levine. You can find that guy on Twitter at BD Rosenberg, PhD. You can also find more of our work by looking at Head Games on Psychology Today. We post a bunch of articles and topics on there. Big thanks for Joshy Boy, Josh Baca, for editing and producing today's show. Thanks so much for tuning in.